You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Joining me on the line is Barbara Jones, the director of the Office for Intellectual Freedom, a unit of the American Library Association. Barbara, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, I'm happy to join you.
Barbara, I saw on the internet, and I'm trying to figure this out, I'm not too familiar with this, but something about Banned Books Week being September 24th to October 1st. Before we get into that, could you explain to the listeners what exactly is the American Library Association, and of course, what exactly does your office do, the Office for Intellectual Freedom?
Thanks a lot, Dave. I'm happy to do that. The American Library Association is the oldest and largest library association in the world. It is 60,000 members strong. It is made up of several divisions, and we include and support school, public, academic, special libraries, any and all kinds of libraries in the United States. And we also have a reach abroad, too, because our association is considered really the North Star, if you will, in terms of the kinds of programs that we do. And the Office for Intellectual Freedom, which I head now, was started 40-some years ago by Judith Krug. It is the only one I know of in the world, and our role is to defend the freedom to read. Sometimes we have to go to court. We would rather we not go to court. It's expensive and stressful. So we try to educate librarians in the field about ALA policies on censorship, on privacy, and all First Amendment-related issues.
Okay. And I guess this ties into Banned Books Week. What exactly is that?
Banned Books Week is 30 years old. It was started by a coalition of librarians here at ALA, publishers, and booksellers in the United States to celebrate the freedom to read. I know it has a kind of a negative connotation, the banning part, but we believe that unless we bring attention to the fact that books are still being censored in this country, we will lose this precious freedom. And one of the reasons Banned Books Week is spreading around the world, this year four or five countries are participating with us, is that many countries understand overseas, especially if they have lived under a totalitarian regime, how important it is to protect the freedom to read. So during Banned Books Week, several activities happen. I would urge people to go to www.bannedbooksweek.org, which is a brand new website. It is sponsored by 8 to 10 groups, and we are having a virtual readout this year. And people can contribute their own reading of their own favorite banned book, and there is a YouTube channel devoted to that. There are also a series of readouts around the country at bookstores and in libraries and within communities. And it's become one of ALA's biggest events.
Maybe I've been in some kind of a bubble. I guess I have, because I never realized that there were books that were banned. And when you say banned, you mean banned in the United States?
Yes. What we mean by banned, and this is a contentious word, we keep statistics, a snapshot, if you will, of any phone calls that we get or reports we get in my office about banned books. And what we mean by that is a book that has been challenged or pulled off the shelves of a library. We only deal with, in my office, with books that have been removed from libraries. And yes, they are banned. That is censorship. We've had some of our detractors say it's not really censorship unless the government pulls a book. In fact, if the library is a government agency paid for with tax dollars and a book is removed, that is a violation of the First Amendment. So this year we had 435 books reported to us as being banned or challenged. If that sounds like a small number for a big country, that if a book is removed from a public library shelf in a community of 10,000, let's say, that book is being withheld from 10,000 people, theoretically. So 435 is a lot more than it sounds like. And also just the fact that people are using that activity, that way, to try to control ideas or protect from what they see as dangerous ideas is, I always like to say, a total waste of energy, because their energy would go better into creating change in other ways. But pulling a book from a shelf really doesn't change things that much.
Right. And I see on your website you have the 10 most challenged titles of 2010. Are there
Yes.
any common threads that these books share, like a theme? I see the
Yeah.
first one, it says reasons, homosexuality, religious viewpoint, unsuited to age group, insensitivity, and other ones, drugs, sexually explicit. What is the most common banned book? Do you have statistics on that?
Yes, the most common are three, and I actually got this from the director of the Bibliotheca Alexandrina in Alexandria, Egypt, and he is an historian, and he said that throughout history there have been three topics: sex, politics, and religion, and I think that that still holds true. So what we see is, for example, the number one book, and it's been on the list a long time, is And Tango Makes Three, which is a children's picture book about two penguins. It's a true story, by the way. It took place in Central Park Zoo of two male penguins who hatched a penguin egg that had been deserted by its mother. And so that's why some parents are concerned that it glorifies homosexuality. So there's the sex issue, and so they think it's unsuited to the age group because the book promotes homosexuality, if you will. That's just one example, but I really think that those three hold true, those three categories. I will say that in this country, thank goodness, political speech in books isn't typically challenged as much as religion and sexual content. That wouldn't be true in a place like Kenya, for example, where I've worked, or other parts of the world where politics is a pretty hot topic and you have to be really careful. But here, thank goodness, we can pretty much, except for, I would say, number eight, Nickeled and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich, I would contend that her political viewpoint is why that book was pulled.
Sure, and she's a prolific author.
Yes.
Kenya, huh? What, Malindi?
I did some work in Kibera, which is a large slum in Nairobi. A friend of mine from Wesleyan University has a library there in a school for girls that he founded, and so I do some volunteer work there. But
oh.
I work a lot overseas. I do a lot of training on intellectual freedom in the developing world, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so tied to Banned Books Week now, because I see what happens in countries where books are removed from library shelves by the police or by government officials. We have a precious freedom here, and we take it for granted. I've seen overseas what can happen and how easy it is to do that.
That's scary. Do you think that there's a danger that the U.S. could slip into that type of scenario where police are coming in and confiscating books?
There have been instances where local sheriffs have come to libraries, to the front desk, and they'll say, I want to see the books that so-and-so has checked out. He's in jail, and we want to find out if he checked out any books on drugs. There are plenty of laws to protect libraries from that kind of confiscation. Law enforcement needs a court order to do that, but a lot of times librarians are just scared of authority and they'll hand books over. We don't like it when that kind of activity happens and librarians don't know what to do. And definitely there are times when we do hand over people's library records. We understand that there are national security issues sometimes or local security issues, but our goal is to protect the freedom to read.
Now, I see here on the top 10 list an older book, Brave New World, by Aldous
Yes.
Huxley. Do you have statistics of the age of these books? Are most of them older or most of them newer?
We don't have statistics on that yet. We are building a brand new database, and hopefully within 2 years we'll have much deeper statistics. Right now what we collect is just a snapshot of what is reported to us. It's not collected the way a social scientist would collect it. Brave New World is there often. So is Huckleberry Finn. So is To Kill a Mockingbird. They're not there this year. But I would say for the most part it's newer books. Right now, we're having a problem with what some of our detractors call dark youth novels, novels that are written for young adults. And I see here on the list we've got a few of those: Lush, The Hunger Games, Crank, What My Mother Doesn't Know. But these are novels that some people think are too depressing for teenagers to read. What we hear is that teenagers love these books because they relate to some of the issues that they're grappling with. And teenagers are dealing with a lot of stuff now that perhaps they didn't deal with when I was a teenager. So what we've heard from teenagers is that a book about drugs or about suicide really helps them understand and doesn't cause them to do these things, but really does help them understand what is going on in their lives. It's not like the book makes them take drugs or makes them cut themselves or makes them become anorexic.
Right. It just enlightens them about these topics.
Right.
Although it's a shame that kids have to even think about these type of things.
It is a shame. But what we've heard from kids is that they love these books because maybe their friends are dealing with these things. We've had a lot of kids write in to us and say that a book has saved their life or has saved a friend's life or who has prevented them from really doing something drastic because perhaps the book has role models in it that help them to understand the situation or an adult to help them. Or the book might encourage them to talk to their parents, or if they can't talk to their parents or they don't have parents, to go to somebody at their school or church. So we just simply think that it's wrong to pull these books off the shelves. Kids don't have to read them. Nobody's forcing them. If they want to read something lighter that's not depressing, there's plenty out there for them to read.
Twilight, that is in fact in the top 10 list, I guess because of its popularity. I guess the whole series is pulled.
Yes, it's amazingly popular. We find that books about vampires are pretty tricky because a lot of people think that they're pulling kids away from traditional religion. What I think is funny is you don't see Harry Potter on here anymore. And for years, Harry Potter was at the top of the list and one of the books we defended most often. I did an interview this year about why is it no longer an issue. And the funny thing is that religious organizations have now accepted the Harry Potter series as having some value. Because Harry Potter, if you look at his ethical values and his loyalty to his friends and his love of his parents and those kinds of things, which is what we were saying for years, indeed, the books are pretty good for kids to read. And so it's funny to me, the trends that these books go through. Well, in fact, we know that 20 and 30-something parents are reading them. So hopefully someday those books will be off our list.
Right. No hope for Brave New World, I guess.
It's interesting about Brave New World and about The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, because in both cases, the books are on there because and are related to Native Americans. Brave New World has offended certain groups within the Native American community in the United States because of Huxley's attitude toward Native Americans as being primitive. And of course, the book was written at a different time.
Sure.
This reminds me of the arguments that we get about To Kill a Mockingbird, which takes place in Alabama during segregation, or Huck Finn, where the N-word is used in the Mississippi River area where certain people use that word. So I think it's probably the same, and I would say with Brave New World, let kids read it and point out how out of date his perceptions are about Native Americans, but don't pull the book to pretend that attitude didn't exist, because it did.
Right, they're actually taking away from history.
Exactly, they are. And I'd recommend they could read along with that book, the Sherman Alexie book, which, by the way, won the National Book Award. It's a fantastic book. I think it will be an American classic someday, if it isn't already. And it's about an Indian kid who makes it in the world, who actually leaves the reservation and goes to college. So for the life of me, I cannot understand why that book has been pulled, because like Harry Potter, it has a positive message for kids that no matter how poor you are, no matter how physically and mentally disabled you are, you can make your mark in life. I think that book should be read by everybody, actually. I think it's a great book about survival. I'm puzzled by many of these, and it breaks my heart when it's classics. And the thing is, if they don't like the book, that's fine. They can shut it. They don't have to read it, but their neighbor might want to read it. And so to remove it from the shelves just really doesn't solve the problem.
Right. Sure, of course. Okay, so the three main reasons that books are banned are sex, religion, and politics. Are there any countries in particular that are more adamant about having the books banned, or not necessarily countries, but individuals who don't want information written about a certain country?
That's an interesting question, Dave, because I was at a meeting, an international meeting, where we broke up into small groups. It was all librarians, and we asked them, what are the books that you personally are offended by? What are the books that you have the most trouble seeing on your library shelves? And the majority of people say books that are blasphemous. If you look around the world, that was the answer that we got most often. So in many parts of the world where religious beliefs are very strong, you'll see that. In Thailand, books can't criticize, or publications can't criticize, the royal family. It's just not done. In Germany, Mein Kampf, I believe, still can't be on library shelves. Anything about the Nazi period is problematic in Germany unless it's an academic library. So Right. There are real different points of view around the world. There was a book about corruption in Kenya called It's Our Turn to Eat, the story of a Kenyan whistleblower. And I was told that that was confiscated at the airport in many cases, but I'm looking at it right here on my shelf. In our country, that kind of book probably wouldn't be banned. You know, it really differs. Although I see here on our list this year, Nickeled and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich is here. First time, very surprising to me, although maybe not so surprising, because she talks about an underclass in this country of workers. And I think people right now during economic hard times are very anxious about that very issue. And I'm really interested in national anxieties and what's going on historically. I'm a historian, so I'm always interested in what's going on in various countries. And then how people use books as a way to demonstrate their displeasure or anxiety about various things. And I think the economic situation in this country is a real worry right now. I guess that's an understatement, isn't it? But that's why I think her book is on there this year.
Right. And it's a real worry, and it's going to become more of a worry as time
right.
goes on.
I'm braced to get more and more criticism and pushback about the programs that our unit does, because the people are concerned, and books is a good way for people to strike out. It's a way for people on the local level to think that they have a modicum of control. And I would urge these people to vote, to participate in community forums, to criticize, but not to try to remove the idea. There are other ways in this country, thank goodness, to voice your criticism beyond banning a book.
Right. Leave the books alone.
Yeah. Leave them alone. I know it's an easy target. I think for a lot of people, they think they're going to solve the problem of drugs among teenagers if they remove a book about drugs. In fact, that's not going to help. And there are other ways that they could work more constructively, in my view, on those issues.
Right. It kind of reminds me of that movie Footloose where they wanted to ban dancing, right?
Yes, exactly.
If the listeners want to learn more about Banned Books Week, which is an amazing thing, besides the bannedbooksweek.org website, do you have any other websites, or does that have everything on it that they would need?
No, you should also go to ALA's website, which is www.ala.org/bbooks. This is a great website, too, because on there we have the ALA policies that are based on the Library Bill of Rights, and the Library Bill of Rights based on the First Amendment of the Constitutional Bill of Rights. We have a very deep set of policy that is based on Supreme Court decisions, that is based on professional ethics. And I urge people to take the time to read that, because a lot of the criticisms that my office gets really are unfair and inaccurate. I don't mind being criticized. This kind of office is a lightning rod. But I do ask that people take the time to understand this really important issue.
Sure. What will be happening during the week of September 24th through October 1st?
Libraries around the country, we're already starting to get photographs and YouTubes. They are already starting to celebrate. A lot of libraries have exhibits of books that have been banned from their library or from other libraries around the world or in this country. One library in Florida is going to have a discussion about a book that was banned 25 years ago and how people feel about it now. And they're going to try to get people from both sides of the situation. I don't know if they're going to be successful, but I love the idea of revisiting a book that was pulled off the shelf and see how people feel about it 25 years later. Last year, Iowa City, Iowa Public Library was in the Iowa Hawks homecoming parade with a megaphone reading from banned books. So there's going to be all kinds of activities. There will be radio programs. There will be band music being played. So it's really one of the most popular events of the American Library Association.
Mm-hmm. You know, from somebody who makes a living off of reading books, but I read mostly nonfiction, so I would imagine there aren't too many nonfiction books on that list, or am I wrong?
The only one this year is Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich, and I would say it's usually fiction.
Barbara Jones, the Director of the Office for Intellectual Freedom, a unit of the American Library Association, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much, Dave, for this opportunity to talk about Banned Books Week.